everybody.
I am Karen Hartglass. You're listening today to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. I'm excited because I am in the new Progressive Radio Network studio today. The move happened a little over a month ago, and I'm finally in the new place, and it's fun. So a big shout out to everybody at Progressive Radio Network for making it happen. Moves are never fun. And there's a lot of stuff here to move. So I appreciate all the work that was done. So here I am, and I've been doing a lot of reading. I will be going to California next week, and I'll be there for about 3 weeks. And I'm going to be very busy. Gary and I are directing some musical theater workshops like we usually do around this time, and working day and night. And there won't be a lot of time for broadcasting this show. So I'm planning in advance, and I'm pre-recording a bunch of shows for next week and the following week and maybe the week after. And as a result, I've read 3 books in the last few days. Now, usually I find reading very relaxing. It's a way to be still instead of moving around. And for me, it's a way to relax. But it was a little stressful, I have to admit, to be able to read so much in a short amount of time and keep everything straight. So let's see what happens. One of the books that I read was a book from 2011, I believe, is when it was written. By today's guest, Joanne Lefebvre Connolly, a veterinarian. The book's called Animal Teaching, and we're going to be talking to Dr. Joanne today. Dr. Joanne is a veterinarian promoting intuitive medicine. She guides families in tuning in with their pets, themselves, nature, and the universe to make medical decisions. She is a vegan and inspires all animals and humans to live in balance as one with the web of life. Dr. Joanne published her first book, which I just mentioned, titled Animal Teaching from Haley's Angels Methods, and is currently writing a second book. So we'll hear more about that in a moment. Dr. Joanne, welcome to It's All About Food.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's a pleasure being here with you.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out and for finding me. I really enjoyed reading Animal Teachings. So the first thing I have to say about myself is that I'm not an animal person per se. I don't have any companion animals living with me. I live in a building that doesn't allow them, but that doesn't keep other people in the building from having them. I know people that have cats and turtles and birds and dogs and who knows what else, but they're not supposed to. And I have friends and family who have dogs and cats and birds and a variety of other things, and I'm fine with them, but it's just not something that I find necessary in my life. Perhaps you can intuit what that means.
Yet. Maybe some animal will find you and change your life forever, because in my world, they seem to give us everything that we're looking for in people and often are disappointed. And so animals are there with unconditional love and support and just making us smile every day. And the best, to me, they've been the best companions and the best teachers. And that's how I ended up writing the book. I just felt the need to share things that humans had not been able to teach me, or vet school, for that matter, but that animals had been able to really make me a better person. So I wish that I wish you to maybe encounter an animal that will, I don't know, teach you a thing or two, or just entertain you one way or another. But either way, it doesn't matter. You know, we all have a purpose here, and you're doing amazing work, and you're vegan, so you're saving animals in your own way. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I acknowledge everything you're saying, and I agree that non-human animals have so much to teach us, and it pains me regularly when I let myself think about all the horrible things that we're doing to other beings that share this planet, in addition to the humans that we abuse as well. We're just a delightful species. But there are some of us who are doing good things like yourself, and I'm really excited to hear about your work.
Thank you. I mean, I definitely wish that the world would be a better place, and it's not over yet. As long as there's life, there's hope that we can go back to that compassionate place, because we all need the same thing. We all want love and support, and team effort is necessary for our survival.
Yeah.
So we do need to work as a team, otherwise it is over.
Okay. Now, we're going to talk about medical or intuitive medicine. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah. So basically, you know, in veterinary school and medical school, we learn about the body, how the body works, and how to try to fix it. But what animals have taught me in the school of life is that obviously there is more than the body. We have emotions and our mind, you know, we get stressed and we go through different stresses in life. And that will have a toll on our physical body because we're all related. So I talk in my book how animals will age much faster when they do share their life with a human that is going through a lot of big life-changing events like a divorce or a disease. So it takes a toll on the animals. I started noticing very early on in my career, which was 18 years ago, how interesting animals would have the same diseases as their people. So if the cat had heart disease, and then the owner would say, oh, yeah, I'm on heart medication too, and I diagnose a dog with back problems, and oh, yeah, me too, I have a bad back, you know? So 18 years later, and a lot of in-depth conversations with people, because I was blessed with this doing an in-home end-of-life care service, which was my dog's legacy. Haley was an old dog, and we helped her pass at home. And after she died, really, my life changed forever, and it was not my doing. I really felt like she was orchestrating something for me, and because people started calling me to go to their homes to help them and their pets, and I started the service in spite of my own will, because I was afraid of, I didn't feel comfortable, and I didn't know what I was jumping into, but I really felt, again, guided by the spirit world, if you might say, and I had never had any experiences. I didn't really belong or believe in any religion or God or anything else, but Haley really made me believe, because she was there. I felt the push. And so by, you know, that was 12 years ago, and I've helped over 10,000 families.
Wow.
Assisting their pets in their passing. So I got to share the most intimate moments with these families and how they've shared with me what their pet meant to them and how they found out, how they knew it was time to help them with the euthanasia because their pets gave them a sign or started hiding in the closet, or sometimes it's the other animals in the household that start picking on the dying one or acting weird. And so that energy of we're all connected became really obvious to me that, you know, there's more than a body. There's more than a brain. We have our heart, and it's full of intuition. And then you're linking in dreams, you know, dreams that guide our footsteps. And I have experienced it myself. I had a horse who got to be at an older age, but I didn't feel like it was time to euthanize him until this one night where he came into my dream, and it was just the most amazing dream, and it's going to be in the next book. But basically, when I woke up and I went to see him, he had gotten, you know, he had gone downhill, and so I felt like my brain was telling me it was time to euthanize him, but because of that dream, I felt like, okay, he's ready. I'm not going to put him through more medical testing and medications and all those things. So that's what I've put all together to call intuitive medicine, because we need to look beyond what's obvious. The personality of the patient will help us make better medical decisions, more fair medical decisions, and will help us either speed up healing when we realize what's causing the disease, or and again, allowing for a peaceful and dignified passing. That's the goal. And it all relates to people as well. So when I talk in my book about animals, I cross over to people, because we're all the same. And I've had some experiences with people dying too. And why is it so hard to die? Well, it can be much easier if we listen to the patient and go go over the bucket list and what is that you need to do before you die. And I've had a few people that I have helped die, you might say, by euthanizing their pet, because everybody was dying in the family. The owner was old and sick. The pet was old and sick, but the owner was hanging on to his dog because that's, you know, you're so bonded that nobody wants to give up on one another. So the animal sacrifices himself and the owner sacrifices himself and hang in there. So that causes more medical suffering. So by euthanizing the pet who was ready, the owner was able to let go without just a few hours. So that's a lot of, you know, wonderful blessings.
Hmm. We have a culture that doesn't know how to deal with death. And it makes it scary for most people. And that's, as you said, a lot of the things that you've learned not only apply to companion animals, non-human animals, but also apply to people. And when it comes to death, we have a really hard time letting go to our family, to our friends, to ourselves, and to our animals. So
and we just need to talk about it more. Obviously, we're afraid of the unknown, and the medical system has been set up that we try to keep the body alive, you know? But we are missing that part of, well, when is enough enough? You know, we're all going to die. We need to face that fact. And so can we die with dignity? Can we not lose that essence of really being fair until the end and not put the body through more than it's supposed to? Because a lot of times people or animals are ready to die and they try to die naturally, and then we step in and call 911, you know, rush into surgery and do this and that, when, oh my God, it would have been perfect, you know, if somebody was just already on his way, and we don't panic, and because we watch, you know, all the signs are there. We, you know, some people on their deathbed will start telling their families, oh, I see my grandma, I see my mom escorting me from the other side, you know, and we dismiss that. Oh, she's hallucinating, you know, and it's very unfortunate because that connection is there between the spirit world and our world, that we need to listen to all those signs of guidance to facilitate that transition that is inevitable.
Now, animals have euthanasia, but most people do not, because in most places it's illegal. And that's a benefit and a disadvantage, both, because sometimes we rush to euthanize an animal, and it may or may not be the right thing to do. And a lot of times with people, we keep them alive, like you said. Being mindful and understanding everything that's going on is the most important thing, and communicating what everyone wants. And doctors aren't trained for that. Veterinarians aren't trained for that.
Well, we're bridging the gap little by little, and I'm hoping that I can help with that because of the amazing lessons that I've learned from the animals on my path. Like you said, it's an individual situation. We need to really look at each patient in a very unique way and discuss with, obviously, the doctor or the veterinarian, the family, and put all our ideas together and all our gut feelings and all the signs that we have, and, of course, do blood work and x-rays if we want to, and then involve the patient. And that's often what we forget to do. You know, everybody else is talking, even when it's a human patient, and then the patient is never really asked, well, what do you want for yourself? How do you feel? And sometimes, unfortunately, you know, the human patient is not able to talk anymore, or when it comes to an animal, they're not able to talk, but they give us signs behaviorally. And again, you know, I've been involved, we all have an intuition. Ultimately, we all are born with that extra sensory feel inside our body that will get us out of trouble or prevent, you know, an accident. Let's say if you just have the worst feeling about going on a trip. And so a lot of times that's all you're left with. You know, your brain has analyzed a situation and you just can't make a decision. Well, you have to go with your gut feeling of what you feel like, where's the energy flowing here? And so there is a way. Like, I can tell you that we don't always euthanize the animals that families person would, let's say, it's inconvenient right now. I'd rather euthanize. I don't have time for my pet. Most veterinarians and more veterinarians are not going to be able to sleep that night. They won't go through with this. So same thing for people. You know, we need to weigh, well, can we help you? Is there a quality of life that is still achievable? What more can we do for you? What are the resources that society has to help? And when we run out of options, then, of course, we want quality of death for that patient, because suffering is worse than dying. That's how I see it.
I believe in intuition. I think it's very powerful, and I think people should work to learn how to tune in more to their intuition. And we're actually getting scientific research now that talks about how there is some intelligence in our gut and how it communicates to our brain and the rest of the body. So I think there's more to this expression of going with your gut, because there's some smart stuff in our guts.
I agree. I've read that too. And, you know, my best advice to reconnect with your intuition is, remember when you were a child, you had your intuition. You were so much in your heart and not caring what other people would think, and you hadn't really learned how to use your brain so much, and you were just going with the flow. And animals, that's what they do. You know, people are always amazed by how their animals are knowing when a storm is coming, or, again, sensing that they're dying. So we all have that, but we forgot. The modern society is keeping us in our brains, and we've kind of got disconnected from our hearts. So we have it. We just need to find it again.
You have a lot of wonderful stories in your book, and I'm sure you have many, many more stories since you've written that book. And a lot of it has to do with the intelligence of the animals, who know what's going on in their life, who know what they need, and who know what's bothering them. And the key is to find a way for them to communicate that to you. And you've done that in numerous situations, and found in some situations that animals that appeared to be ill just had some kind of emotional issue with other animals or the people that were living with them. Can you talk a little bit about that, or maybe you have some stories you could share?
We're extremely connected, and yeah, I can give you, for example, we rescued this little chihuahua, and life was grand for him. He was the king of the house, the only dog. There's a few cats, but he was still, you know, he had his kingdom to himself. And then a few years went by, and this puppy found us, starving on the side of the road. And, of course, we took him in, and our chihuahua almost died. He went into an emotional shock of, oh, my God, I am not sharing my kingdom. Mm-hmm. And it's part, you know, it's part of the breed. Chihuahuas, a lot of times, are not social. They like to be the only dog. And so we had to do a lot of doggy psychology because this puppy needed to be rescued. And that's how we got our chihuahua, you know, saving his life in the first place. So now the puppy is 7 years old and our chihuahua is thriving. But we had to really work hard to make him feel like he still has his kingdom, because obviously the puppy is a large breed to begin with, so he takes a lot of space, but he's just a puppy at heart even now. So different personalities, and you have to understand the needs of each animal. And often people say, oh, I have a bunch of cats at home. But no, everyone has unique needs. And we have one cat right now who needs to go outside. It's part of his health, really, physical health. If we tried to keep him as an indoor cat, he would get constipated. And he came from the wild. We rescued him when he was really tiny. We had to bottle feed him. But his inner wilderness is still so present that if he doesn't go out, he gets sick, he starts beating up on everybody. He's just not well, mentally or physically. So we made the deal with him. You know, we sent him out during the day, hope for the best. Obviously, we don't want him to get killed, but we realize that if we keep him inside, he might die of other things, of stress-related boredom issues, of not being able to fulfill his life purpose and live to the best of who he is. So those are really good examples of a lot of problems, common problems that we see in life. And same thing for ourselves. You know, if you don't fulfill your dreams, you don't feed your soul, you'll end up with issues, mental issues, physical issues, and you need to get to feed your soul that good energy of fulfillment and feeling that you matter in this lifetime. You know, a lot of older people, when they retire, oh my God, it's like a death sentence. They don't feel like they're valued anymore. They're not helping society. And it's really difficult for them. They get really depressed. I used to live in a town where it was just retired people. And so they were most of my clients. So they ended up all volunteering at this animal shelter. And oh my God, it just changed them. I'm sure all of them lived another 20 years because they were so back to being full of life and having a purpose and making a difference. And so that's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Dr. Joanne, we have a caller. Nancy is on the line, and I wanted to open it up and hear what she had to say. Nancy.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hey there, Karen. I just wish I'm going to have to listen to your show later because I'm just pulling up with Joey. I've been at the vet, and what is going on is our dog, was diagnosed with, after us doing breathing problems and some much difficulty, laryngeal paralysis. And long story short, a lot of things have happened, and then went into crisis mode, and he had surgery yesterday to tack the one side back of on the left side of the larynx. And so just looking into, you know, future care and things to, we've got all the precautions with feeding and whatnot. But he is elderly, but he had a good, blood work and all that. So we did go ahead and have the surgery. And so we just want to have sure of a healthy, happy life from here on, because it's been difficult for the last several months. And I know there could be neurological issues, and aspiration is an issue with pneumonia. So... looking into that, do you foresee...
Okay, Dr. Joanne, do you have any insights or comments for Nancy?
Well, congratulations for your pet reaching a very senior age, because that's typically when the laryngeal paralysis happens and becomes really impairs the breathing. That happens only in the very old animal. So I'm grateful that his quality of life seemed adequate otherwise, that we felt like we can go to surgery and hopefully buy him a few years. Like you said, we have to be aware, I would say, of each day how he is feeling and really focus on quality of life because of the risks of aspiration of food into his lungs. That is the biggest risk because of the surgery. It helps the breathing, but it makes the food, you can't close your lungs when you eat, so the food is at risk of going into the lungs. So I would say feed him really small bites of food, you know, slowly. So make sure he eats really slowly over like a longer period of time, and really enjoy life to the fullest with him. And what I tell people in those, you know, precarious situations, have a good talk with your pet. Give him permission to make it clear when it's time for him to go, and to just give him permission to let go when he's ready. And just so it doesn't mean, you know, then you forget about it and you enjoy life, but I find it really important to just tell our pets that it's okay for them to go when they're ready, because we don't want them to suffer and we don't want them to sacrifice themselves for us. So at any point of time, and age is not, you know, old age is not necessarily when we need to have that conversation. At any age, it's important to let the animals really be true to who they are, so they can, again, follow their path when it's their time to go. But then until then, have fun with them. I'm glad you're getting a second chance of spending more time with them. Taking it one day at a time. That's all we can do.
Okay. Oh, I thank you so much. Thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Karen.
And we're sending healing energies and lots of love to Joey. Thanks for your call. Well, thank you, Dr. Joanne, for that. That's really helpful information about that specific thing. I'm sure there are so many different health issues that require really specific knowledge, but that was important. You know, and it's not just for that particular case, but a lot of us could eat more slowly takes more smaller bites of food, being mindful about everything we eat, chewing until the food is liquid in our mouth. I say this from time to time, and I have to remind myself because we live in this crazy fast-paced world. But digestion begins in the mouth, and it's so important to eat slowly and chew and enjoy every bite.
I completely agree, and I'm guilty of it, too. It is crazy how fast-paced this world is, and we have to remind ourselves to just slow down and take time to stretch like the animals do and take time to really roll in the grass and look at the sun and just enjoy being alive. You know, gratitude for what is, what we have here, and there's so much good in the world that we need to not forget about.
You mentioned to Nancy, and you brought it up a little bit before, about letting go. And I want to dig into this a little more because this is very hard. And I believe I read in your book that sometimes it's the people that need to let go to let the animal go. And sometimes it's the animal that needs to let go because they want to be there for their person.
It's very tricky because, yes, when I ask people, I always ask them, how did you find your pet? How did you choose that one pet? And seriously, most people, like 99% of people will say, oh, no, my pet chose me. Mm-hmm. I had a totally different dog in mind, or I was not even looking, but this cat just jumped on my lap, or, you know, was walked home with me. So it's always fascinating to me how animals find us for a purpose, you know, for a reason. And I had this client who had trouble walking himself. He had, a lot of issues. And then the kitty that found him, you know, had gotten hit by a car and couldn't walk. And together they were just supporting one another through life and making each other feel normal again. So that's, you know, it gets so powerful. Animals touch our hearts where humans can't. And a lot of people feel guilty. They tell me, oh, my God, I cried more when my animal died then when I lost my own mother, and they feel guilty over it. And I said, no, don't feel guilty. Animals really touch us in a way that they have a place where, you know, nobody else can take. So it gets difficult to let go, and we just need to be mindful, obviously, that we can't save our animals. We can't make them live forever. And we become like the maternal and paternal instinct kicks in to a level that is just unbelievable. When you have animals and you're so in touch with them and you just want to keep them from being hurt. And, you know, it's like when you have children, I mean, you become this mama bear. You become fearless of just you're going to fight to preserve the life of your animal. And so we all need to, again, remember that we're all going to die. This is a cycle. The animal comes here for a short time, unfortunately. When we lost Haley, I told my husband, next animal needs to be an elephant that lives 100 years. It's so unfair, you know. Even 14 years, which was an amazing long life for a big dog like Haley, it's just not long enough. But through, you know, Haley passing, which obviously was really devastating, she's taught me some things, and then I became more resilient, and I started seeing life in a different way. Of okay, of course, our time here is limited, so let's enjoy each day to the fullest. And that's how I live my own life. I don't know how long I'm going to live. So living each day on Earth like it's your first day here, and this is like children and animals see it. First day, everything is beautiful. You just look at the good in life, and you get so inspired to jump in and help out. But also live each day like it's your last day, that, okay, this is it. You know, I need to give it all I have because we don't know about tomorrow. And so it just helps you prepare. Because you don't know how long an animal will be with you. And it can be, you know, we unfortunately have to euthanize kittens and puppies that are really, really sick, and children. And it's hard, but just understanding that what's worse than dying is the suffering. So that's why, you know, euthanasia has its place. We don't use it on everybody. And for people, it would be the same thing. And in Europe, where it's more legal, and in a few states, you know, where it's becoming more legal, we don't use it on everybody, but we use it when it's necessary. And, oh, my God, such a relief to be able to have a celebration of life. And the process of dying becomes really loving, and we're just helping someone move on to the next world. And it's amazing what I experience at home, where the pet, the dying pet, is present, surrounded by his animal friends, his people friends, the whole family, grandparents, neighbors, friends, everybody just come over. Some people play music. We had an ice cream, vegan ice cream, and apple pie party for the dog. The dog had like seven other doggy friends that came over. And then we were all looking at pictures of this old dog when he was a puppy and his whole life story, you know? And if we could do that for people, of just embracing the celebration of, oh my God, what this person has done in her life to make an impact, or how good of a mother, or how whatever it is that is your life purpose and that what you give your energy to while you're here, celebrating all that, so death is not such a horrible thing. It's natural. It's normal.
Can we talk a little bit about the kind of cosmetic surgeries that are done to pets that are really are to benefit humans and are really abusive sometimes to the animals? So
it's always,
let's start with declawing as one. So here in New York, we recently passed a bill to make it illegal to declaw a cat. Can you talk about declawing and what it does?
I saw the post about the law in New York, and I'm so happy. It causes me a lot of pain, obviously. I don't do it. It's always a convenience, you know, reason. And I really tell people, if you're not able to embrace the cat in what he is or she is, don't get a cat. Get a fish. Get another animal that is more suited for your lifestyle. Cats do seem to be wanting to go after leather. They seem to have a appreciation for leather couches. But, you know, you have to pick, what do you want? Do you want the leather couch, which to me is a dead cow in my living room, so I don't want that. I don't have anything that's made of leather. And I want the animal companionship, you know, the bond. To me, there's no question there. It's a handicap that we're causing to this animal. We're amputating all of the fingers. And when I see my own cats, how playful and intricate they are able to grab their toys with their little fingers. And I have a cat, actually, that will eat like a raccoon, basically. And we call him, he looks like a raccoon, too. He's a very interesting character. But he uses his feet to grab his little bit of kibbles or canned food sometimes we give him. And so he could not do any of that. They can't stretch once they're declawed. A lot of cats end up with physical issues like arthritis also in their feet, and they become biters. They have no way of defending themselves, so they become biters more than they used to be. So, and the pain, we didn't even talk about the pain involved for that procedure, but to me it needs to be outlawed everywhere in this world. People need to understand that, if you're going to adopt a cat, I'm going to embrace the animal as is and not change that.
And then there are other lovely things that we do. We can take the bark out of a dog.
Terrible. Yeah, very terrible. I've seen that done once, and I just wanted to die, really. It was terrible. I never did that procedure. Luckily, it's not as common as declawing. It's really bad, because then not only this poor animal is, you know, just, hey, what happened? I can't hear myself, and I think it causes some definitely anxiety. But because of where it's located at the entrance of the windpipe, and you cut the vocal cords, it causes a lot of scar tissue. And then when the animal needs a life-saving surgery, you cannot intubate the animal. It's really difficult to slide a tube into the windpipe of the animal to hook it up to oxygen for the surgery and gas. It's terrible.
What else do we do?
We cut the ears, crop the ears, and take the dew claws, you know, cut the dew claws and the tails on when the puppies are 3 days old or so. People do that. I don't, but it's just for breed standards. And, you know, I have that, I have that discussion often. The animals that are getting their ears cropped are not the ones that should. Like, if you're going to crop somebody's ear, you should do it for health. And then we talk about preventing ear infections by allowing the ears to breathe more, because basically you're chopping most of the ear flaps off, and it it's just for looks, the way we're doing it, pit bulls and Dobermans. And but my argument is always, if we're going to do this, let's do this to Cocker Spaniels who have chronic ear infections because they have such big and thick ears. You know, they're so fluffy that the bacteria love to grow in their ears canal because their ears are down also, so it promotes the heat and the humidity. So, you know, and again, I'm against all of it, but if you're going to do it for a medical reason, we didn't choose the right breed, so we need to stop that because it's, I've seen so many puppies, it's painful, and I've seen them, like, after the surgery is done elsewhere, and then they come to me for suture removals, and their ears are all taped up on top of their head, and then you remove the tape, and it hurts, and then the skin is all red and infected. Just lately, in the last month, it's interesting that we're talking about this, but I've seen two puppies that were just in so much pain for no reason. We've done all this, and it's really terrible.
And the doctors that will agree to do some of these things when it's really not necessary, that's sad.
Because if they
wouldn't do it, it wouldn't happen.
Exactly. And then some doctors will say, well, if at least I'll try to do it right, so they don't do it at home, because some people would just duck their own puppy's tail.
Okay.
We're a sad society. We need to step it up. You know, we can do much better than that.
And how do you feel about breeding?
Well, obviously, you know, the world is overpopulated, so I don't have children. I don't breed animals. I think when you look at, we need to be sustainable. Sustainable living is huge for me, and we are way over the top. We're not living sustainably for animals or people. So I think we should take a break and really take care of the animals and the people that are already here that don't have good life, that are stuck in shelters, that are roaming the streets, homeless. And we should take care of our animals and people that are stuck here. And if the situation arises that, yes, we should breed, well, we need to look at nature and learn what nature is teaching us, which is breeding for health. So when you look at what should a dog look like, a dog should look like a coyote, should have pointy ears standing up that prevents ear infections, should have a nice long nose so they can breathe through it. You know, English bulldogs, Frenchies, yes, they're really cute. Pugs, you know, they're really cute, but they can't breed. We deal, so many of the diseases that we deal with are, we cause them. They're breed related because of what we've done, so the animals would look a certain way. And that's not fair. That's just not fair. So we breed tiny little 2-pound dogs. That's all how big they're going to get. That's not sustainable with life either. They get hypoglycemic crisis. Their blood sugar drops because they have no reserves. That's not what the wild teaches us. You need to be medium size. You know, again, like coyotes, when you were breeding 200-pound dogs, they don't live to be 6 years old. That's really, really sad. We're not doing them any favor. So we need to stop really wanting to look great with our dogs that look a certain way and really breed for health. And I extend that to people. You know, when there's a lot of genetic diseases that run through a family, maybe we can be mindful of that and adopting a child instead of really wanting to breed, especially if people are having trouble and they need to reach out to doctors for in vitro fertilization and things like that. Well, maybe how about we adopt a child? I've got a few friends who were adopted, and I just, you know, I love them. And they're great people, and I'm so grateful that they got a chance at life, you know. We all deserve that chance, so we can help each other.
Beautiful. I agree with everything you said. We do have a serious population issue on this planet, and maybe there's a way, if we're really smart and mindful, that we can sustainably hold many, many more billions. I don't know, but right now it's really taxing our resources and our systems, and a smaller population would relieve a lot of problems. And that's not just for humans, that's for animals too, because we're overpopulating the world, growing a lot of animals to feed people.
I know, I'm amazed that we're still able to sustain. You know, it's just really scary to me. It's really sad. It brings me a lot of sadness to see what we've done when we had really something good going. And I'm, again, it's, you know, as long as there's life, there is hope. But we really need to all become very aware and conscious of our situation and watch less TV and spend more time helping each other.
Oh, turn off the television. Yeah, I like to say find your kitchen and make your own healthy food, but we also need to turn off the TV.
Yes, start growing the garden and spending time outside. You know, it's so healthy. It's so healthy to be out there and just living off the land and, yeah, as sustainably as possible. Buying less stuff, less plastic.
So there's we talked a little bit earlier in the program about intuitive medicine, and some of it is just common sense that people need to be made more aware of, and our medical practitioners need to become more sensitive. But then there's another piece that's more spiritual. Some people would think it's a little out there or spacey, but I think that's where all the magic is. And you've talked about, let's just touch first on dreams and how important they can be. I know I've had some amazing dreams that have led me to some very powerful answers in my life.
That's great. I'm glad you have experienced it. I suggest to everybody to fall asleep with a piece of paper and a pen next to the bed. And then when you're waking up at 2 a.m, you're going to the bathroom or you're, you know, in your dreams, still like write some things down. Or when you're waking up in the morning, but you're still laying in bed, and that dream is still very vivid, try to write down how you're feeling and what you're getting from the dream at that time so you don't forget. And yes, we receive messages of guidance in so many ways. And I talk about it in the book. You know, dreams is one way, but when we're awake also, and animals in the wild, let's say, you know, will often give us answers of, answers of questions that we might have. And I was in, like, one example I can give you. I almost got bit by a rattlesnake one time. We lived in Arizona for many years, and I was just in a very bad place mentally, and I was just, you know, walking in my yard and just feeling really bad about myself. And this rattlesnake just showed up in front of me to really snap me out of it. And so I always pay really close attention to the synchronicities in my life to learn the messages, like, so I don't hurt myself, because I really feel like we can prevent accidents when we are balanced and zen inside. And anything that happens, like a disease or again, an accident, is there to remind us, hey, you're out of balance here, and there are messages of guidance. And if you deny them or say, oh, yeah, whatever, you know, and you, then the messages keep getting bigger and more hurtful. So we need to pay attention to those things. I had a business meeting once with three people that I didn't know, and they had an offer for me, and I needed to think about it. And I, you know, I didn't have such a great vibe. And then I went home. And who was waiting for me at the door? I had scorpion, a black widow, and a venomous Colorado river toad, all three at once waiting for me in front of the house. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God, thank you. We're done, you know. That's for sure. I'm not going to do anything with these people. So I noticed those signs, and now they're everywhere. When you start paying attention, synchronicities in life are everywhere.
I believe that. Okay, we're coming towards the end of the program. Can you tell us some stories, some animal stories? I know you've got a few that are going in your new book. I don't know when your new book's coming out, but I love to
hopefully
hear them.
Hopefully by next year.
Yeah, I love to hear the stories because I think we're storytelling. Humans are storytellers, and we relate mostly to stories. And stories about individuals.
I'll tell you a really good one that touches on a lot of things, and that's going to be in the next book, and hopefully next year, in 2020. That's my goal, to have it finished. But we'll see what the universe wants. You know, I follow the flow. But anyway, I had really bad horse allergies. during vet school, I would do my horse rotations and go to the barns, and I would just try to die. You know, my eyes would just be watery. My nose was all stuffed up and runny and just major, you know, attacks. And so I really liked horses. I've always loved horses. And so my mom is, you know, a naturopath, very intuitive. We have a lot of deep-hearted conversations. So one day we're having lunch and we're talking about my allergies. And again, trying to step out of your brain and just stay in your heart. And I see this movie in my head of me as a Native American, and the white men were capturing the wild horses, and I was watching all of this. And I just burst into tears. And that was the root of my allergy. And a lot of people in the, you know, spiritual community will talk about allergies as an emotional shock. That's where it comes from. And so for me, just reliving and understanding what was stored in my subconscious mind about my problem and how it just made so much sense, because when I'm around horses, I look like I'm sad. You know, I'm crying, my nose is running, and it's just so... Just becoming aware, I was already feeling much better. Like, it was kind of overnight, you know. I would spend time with the horses and I would feel okay. But I had this deep, deep need of rescuing a horse. I really felt like I needed that experience. So we lived in Arizona for 11 years, and the time came, the life chapter ended. I do see life as a book, just like a book, a series of chapters, and we all need to be really mindful of the signs when a chapter is ending, and it's just like somebody's dying, you need to let them go. And so that chapter, when you know that all the signs are there, you know, you're losing your job or you're moving away or whatever it is, let that chapter end. So anyway, it's not easy, obviously, but I knew that Arizona chapter was over. My husband and I had to take the biggest leap of faith that we had ever taken to regain our balance. We needed water, we needed grass. I needed a horse, and I was not going to have a horse in the desert. You know, they need to graze. I don't get it, how horses can be in the desert. But so everything pushed us towards Florida. I fired myself. You know, I had this amazing in-home euthanasia service for 12 years, but I could not do it anymore. I was so burnt out, and I had to fire myself, say, okay, we're done. And so we had no job lined up, moved to Florida, and the house that we moved in, we started finding pennies. As soon as we moved in, we found pennies randomly outside, everywhere we were. And that was such a sign for my husband and I that, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to make this work. You know, we're going to reinvent ourselves. And then we meet our next door neighbor, and the first thing she tells me is, are you ready for your horse? Because I know who he is. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, talk about how things are just unfolding. And that was the biggest gift for me. It was like telling me, good job. You ended that last life chapter. It did not kill you. Congratulations, because I had a few near car accidents. I was so sleep deprived driving to people's homes. You know, it was really bad. So now I was being gifted with my biggest dream of all when I was a child. You know, I just always loved horses. So this horse shows up. He needed a second chance at life himself, and the two of them just healed for almost 2 years. He was an old guy, but he was spoiled. We had a pond. We had 4 acres of land, and he just swam in the pond every day. And him and I never had allergies with him. I was just living like in the old days of when I was a Native, and I really feel like I lived as a Native. I relate to everything that they stand for. And it hurts me so much to see our home, the earth, being destroyed. And when trees are being cut, I want to cry, honestly. It just really hurts me. So I did a lot of healing with this horse, and he's the one who told me in my dream 2 years later that it was time for him to be free. Mm. And we helped him pass, and it was, again, you know, so many tears, oh, my God, but tears of joy and tears of sadness and tears of gratitude for how connected we all are.
How long have you been in Florida?
3 years.
Okay, and are you doing any veterinarian practice?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love what I do. I just have found a really good balance right now. I don't advertise my services because it just goes like wildfire.
Mm-hmm.
So just through word of mouth, I'm able to still go do home visits because I enjoy it. It really helps me helping others. But I also work at the ER. I pick up some shifts at the ER because it stimulates another part of my brain, and I like to help animals when they're in crisis. And I do work also part-time at the general practice. So I would have to say that I'm the most balanced I have ever been right now. And I have some extra time to meet amazing people like you and share really what's in my heart. So
we only have a few more minutes. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, which I didn't get to until right now, is when you mentioned doing home visits, I realized how important that is for animals, but also for people, because going to a medical facility can be so frightening. And especially for an animal who doesn't really know where they are.
Yes, there is no place like home, obviously. And there is a place, obviously there is a place for a hospital. You know, if surgery needs to be done, we want it to be done at the hospital in a sterile way. And so it's a balance. Everything in life is balanced. And I would love to have more doctors do home visits, and they're coming back to that. We're going full circle here. I have met some MDs that, you know, most of them are very miserable working at the hospital. One patient after the next is just numbers, and they're burnt out, and they don't get to feed their souls by helping the patient and really bonding with the patient. So I know a few of them who are definitely going to the homes and trying to get that movement starting again. So we can just bring the humanity back in the healthcare system and really the compassion that all doctors became doctors for. You know, you love helping, and you want to be given that time like I take when I go to home visits. It's just so magical.
You talked earlier about talking to your animal, and communication to everyone is so important, and we just are not very good at it. I think that's the biggest problem everyone has. But I think I remember reading this in the book, how explaining to your animal when something's going to happen, discussing it and talking about it before it happens to kind of have them be more calm about what's about to happen. Now, did I read that, or am I making it up?
No, that's perfect. Yes. So I'll tell you the most common example that's always so funny. You know, when you're starting, you're planning a trip and you're going to go out of town, and your cat or your dog just jump right in your suitcase, you know, and they just don't want you to go anywhere. So I had the, animals, behaviorally, we're communicating much more than we think we are. And our animals are always a step ahead of us. As far as the daily routine goes, you know, if we, like one of my dog, I mean, it's crazy. He knows, like, he won't move while I'm preparing his dish until I grab the fork. And then he knows that this is like, okay, we're 2 seconds away now. And he goes to his food bowl.
Mm.
And so they're always so in tune. The story I want to tell you is I was working, that was in Arizona many years ago, but I had this awesome kitty friend named Bandito, and I talked to Bandito. I talk about him in the book, but I almost euthanized him. He was brought to me. He was 14 years old, and the family just wanted to get rid of him, basically, and they were claiming he had urinary issues and this and that. And he was such a special cat, and my boss was just the best boss, and he said to me, okay, you know, we'll just adopt him. And so he had a couple free loaders, as he would call them, just living in the hospital because he wanted to give him a chance at life. So Bandito chose me as his project again to make me a better person. We would have lunch, you know, an hour lunch every day. And I was always, you know, overworked and workaholic and passionate about what I do. So it's always really hard for me to shut off my brain for an hour. So Bandito would eat lunch with me, but he sensed when my brain was just so far gone into next month's planning, he would gently, but he would grab my hand and he would bite me gently, but forcefully, like, hey, snap out of it. Be here. Be present in the moment. So I had to go home to Canada, see my family. And I needed to tell him. I was really afraid he was going to die because he lived to be 19. But, you know, you don't know. Each day is a gift. He had heart disease. And so I explained to him. I took the calendar. I took my planner, and I showed him the days. And not obviously that animals understand as much as we do, but on an energy level, my God, they're so in sync. So I wanted to show him, and I showed him in my head, like, the sun will rise, the sun will set, that will be one day. And then going through all the days that I was going to be gone, and when I was going to leave and when I was going to come back, and I asked him if he could please wait for me. I would really love to be there for him when he dies. So the last day that I was working at the hospital, just before I flew that night home, this cat followed me around the whole day. Like, he's never done that before. And he just followed me around. Everybody noticed. Like, what is he doing? I'm like, well, he knows I'm leaving tomorrow. I guess he's being supportive. Hmm. And it was just so amazing.
Yeah.
So it doesn't hurt to do it. Doesn't hurt to do it. It made me feel much better. Animals get really stressed out in boarding facilities, so it wouldn't hurt to just give them a heads up of when you're coming back and that, hey, I'll come back to pick you up.
Well, we just have less than a minute left, and I want to say that it's important to talk to animals. I have, as I mentioned, I'm not a pet person, but I did have one experience talking to a bird. My listeners have heard the story before, and we don't have time to talk about it, but it was very powerful. I sang to this bird that wasn't singing for a long time, and the song was about singing and teaching me how to sing, and afterwards the bird started singing again. So there's,
oh, wow.
And that's a very concentrated version of the story, but it makes a difference to communicate. And even though we're using our words, we're also using our energy, and somewhere in there they understand.
That's beautiful.
So Dr. Joanne, thank you for reaching out and connecting with me. I really enjoyed reading your book, and I look forward to the next one. And thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much.
Okay. That's it. That's another show. I've babbled away another hour, and I'm so glad I did, and that you're listening. Let me know what you think. Contact me at info@realmeals.org. Visit me at responsibleeatingandliving.com. Everybody, have a delicious week. We'll be right back.